Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, but you know already that this is a major week and we have to bring reinforcements. And once again, our European guru, Kieran Clark, is with us, so I'm going to bring him in first. Kieran, hi, how are you today?
Hi, Carlos. I'm very well today, and I'm certainly looking forward to the PGA Championship this week, the last major of the calendar year. And obviously, we have Rory McIlroy back in action, really surprising everybody, but certainly a welcome return for Rory, the world number one. And he's going to be on Thursday playing alongside Jordan Spieth and Zach Johnson, the major winners of this year. And the opportunity to see McIlroy and Spieth going head-to-head potentially this week is something that's certainly very thrilling. Whistling Straits is a fascinatingly unique venue. And you know, the PGA, it may be the least distinguished of the majors in many ways, but it's always compelling, and I'm sure this week will be just as interesting.
Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, guys. I got to scratch two golf courses off my bucket list last week. Toyota Country Club, the home of Jack Nicklaus, and the Alistair McKenzie Perry Maxwell Creation Crystal Downs in Michigan. It was a very big week. It was also a big week for the Irish, too. Notre Dame football starting back up. Irishman Shane Lowry won the WGC Bridgestone. And as Kieran said, Rory McIlroy's back playing the PGA Championship this week at Whistling Straits. So to top it all off, we've got Kieran on board tonight, and we're going to talk about the PGA Championship. So I'm excited. Let's go, Carlos.
Let's go. And we have two very important guests of the week. We always don't get only one. We often go two. And one of them is Luke Elvey. He's the Aussie golf broadcaster extraordinaire who is at Whistling Straits. And very importantly, we have Jason Mengel, who is the PGA Championship Tournament Director. So you don't want to miss that. But let's start right away with the weekend backspin. We had a WGC event this back weekend, and Shane Lowry, he began daydreaming on Sunday morning about lifting the Bridgestone Invitational Trophy there on the 18th green, and then he would quickly return to reality because he knew there was a long day ahead with world-class players all around him. Turns out he was right. He just never could have dreamed how it unfolded. Lowry hooked one tee shot so far left that he was given a free drop because the 11th tee box was in the way. He opened the face of a pitching wedge to hit over a 50-foot tree and made birdie. Lowry finished the biggest run of his career with a sandwich that he hammered through a tree on the 18th to just over 10 feet for a closing birdie. Talk about that's how you win a game. Not to be overlooked were two huge par saves that carried him to a 4-under-66 and a two-shot victory over Bubba Watson. Watson also close with a 66. Jim Furyk and Justin Rose, who shared the 54-hole lead, fell behind in the front line and couldn't catch a 20-year-old Irishman. Both close, sat with a 72, tied for third. Masters and U.S. Open champion Jordan Spieth, he closed with a 66 and tied for 10th, his fifth straight top 10 during a stretch in which he has won four times. You know, Lowry produced a flawless card and a full supply of fist bumps for his biggest victory. He won the Irish Open in 2009 as an amateur and then added the Portugal Masters 3 years later. He wasn't even sure he was in the Bridgestone Invitational until he narrowly qualified at number 48 in the world. He became the first non-PGA Tour member to win a World Golf Championship since Martin Kaymer as the won the 2011 HSBC Champions. Lowry now moved to number 19 in the world and plans to play both tours next year. So, Kieran, how about this win by Shane Lowry?
Well, it was a massive breakthrough victory for Shane Lowry. You know, he's someone who I felt for the past year or two, I think he's improved dramatically as a player. And I've always felt that he was on the verge of perhaps maybe having a breakthrough, whether it be in a major championship or indeed in a World Golf Championship. And, of course, we saw back in June at Chambers Bay, he contended all throughout the week during the US Open. And I think that was a big experience for him. It gave him a taste of competing in a major type event with, you know, big crowds and a big field and big prize money on the line. And I think that experience proved to be invaluable on Sunday at Firestone. But, you know, it's a win, obviously. It, you know, opens many doors now onto the PGA Tour, secures his status on both tours for over 5 years, gets him into the majors for the next couple of years, and, you know, really, now he has decisions to make in terms of what he's going to do with his career next. And from what I understand, Shane is very much a homeboy. He loves staying in Ireland. That's where he's from. He loves the lifestyle there. And I don't think he's going to divert from that dramatically at all. He may play more on the PGA Tour next year now he has a card, but I don't think he will relocate permanently to the PGA Tour. I think he'll perhaps do something like Padraig Harrington does, and that's commute whenever he wants to play in America, and obviously play very much in Europe as well. As the move to the United States doesn't always work for some people. You know, Nicholas Coulthard, who played in the Ryder Cup team a few years ago, he spoke about it a fortnight ago, actually, at the Paul Laurier match play in Aberdeen. And he mentioned how when he went to the PGA Tour a couple of years ago, he really struggled to adapt to the different lifestyle and what didn't suit him at all, and he didn't feel comfortable in the US, and that contributed to his loss of form. So he came back to Europe, and he's trying to improve his game. So I think Shane will probably do the same, stay in Europe, go and play some events in the PGA Tour and balance both tours. But, you know, he's a wonderful player. And, of course, you mentioned there that win at Baltrae in the Irish Open in 2009 when he was an amateur. That was something special. In the downpouring rain, he beat the world's best hair in Robert Roth in a playoff for that one, if I recall correctly. And, you know, he plays the game with a refreshing freedom. You know, he's a great rhythm to his game. He doesn't hang about. He just gets on with it. And he plays the game, I think, very much like amateur players do. He just plays it no fuss, no nonsense. And placed him with a natural sense, and he's a very talented player. He's got a terrific short game, and he showed during that final run in the back nine in particular, he's got a great ability from trouble, and he has obviously a bit of luck in the trees, but he certainly had the execution and the vision to pull off some remarkable recovery shots. So Shane Lowry is a really talented player. Now he's in the world's top 20, and I expect him to actually establish himself there. And now the ambition for him surely now is to keep himself in that position, but obviously next year compete in some majors and maybe even get onto the Ryder Cup team under Darren Clark, and I wouldn't put it past him. So it was a fantastic breakthrough for him. The first player from the Republic of Ireland to win a WGC, and also, dare I say it, the best beard to ever win a World Golf Championship.
Hey, Fred, how about that? Shane Lowry's been really rising under the radar, but we've been talking about him, about his improvement. How about this win for him?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Kieran, about the beard. But everything went just right for him last week. He even finished it off by sculling it into the tree on the 72nd hole, and the tree made a perfect catch and deposited the ball right near the cup. So when it's your week, it's your week. He was the only player to reach double digits at 11 under. Played great on a very difficult golf course. The only downside, he didn't get to keep the 550 FedEx Cup points because he's not a PGA Tour member. He did get 225, is now number 19 in the official world golf ranking. And as Kieran mentioned, has a lot of exemptions, so he's in good shape. Bubba posts final round 66 to finish runner-up, just two shots back. Third round leader Jimmy Furyk let another one slip away with a final round 2 over 72, finished tied for third with Justin Rose. Robert Streff had another good week, along with Brooks Koepka, Danny Lee, David Lingmuth, and Henrik Stenson. These guys, Lingmuth, Lee, Koepka especially, they all just keep popping up on the top of leaderboards. Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler tied for T10, and Jason Day was just one shot back for a T12. So all the big names are playing great coming into PGA this week. You know, and another thing, Carlos, looking ahead to next year, we got the news that because of the clash in the dates, due to the Olympics next year, the WGC Bridgestone got moved up, and it coincides with the Alstom French Open. And so Ken Pelley, who's the new European Tour president, kind of fired a shot across the bow of the PGA Tour a little bit, announced on Monday that it would not sanction the 2016 WGC Bridgestone because of that conflict. This is the first that the WGCs have always been sanctioned by all the major tours and golf federations. So it's appearing that Pelley's kind of showing the European Tour sponsors and tournament directors that he's not going to be bullied by the PGA Tour. What do you think about that?
Wow, that's the first that we see big move from him. Let's see if it doesn't fire back at him, because he needs those big players to come back and play in the Europe. So whether they decide they go to the Open of France or the WGC, that remains to be seen. So let's see what he moves. So, Kieran, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's firstly an unfortunate situation. Obviously, a freak incident, given that the golf's returning to the Olympic Games next year. It's not something that we'll see every single year, of course. However, I think it's an example here. The European Tour is always in a difficult position. You know, it is dwarfed financially by the PGA Tour, and the Open de France is one of the marquee events on the European Tour calendar. It's played in a fantastic golf course in Le Golf National. It has fantastic crowds. It attracts generally a very good field. And, you know, next year it's going to celebrate, the event will celebrate its centenary. It is the oldest of the continental European Open Championships. Only the Open Championship and the South African Open and the US Open are actually older than it. So it's a really historic event. And for Keith Pelley coming in there, is obviously recently just starting his job as the new executive director of European Tour. You know, Fred's right there. You know, he has got to show the sponsors, the backers of the European Tour, that he is there to protect its events and protect their interests, and that's what his job is. He's there to protect the European Tour. And you know, I think he has done, it's a difficult situation, I think he's done probably the right thing. It is an interesting precedent, but and certainly you have players now have to make a decision, European players, guys like Henrik Stenson and Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia, often play in the French Open. And obviously Shane Lowry wants to defend whether he wants to defend at Akron next year or indeed play in Paris. So it's a difficult situation, but I think the European Tour have done the sensible thing. They have to protect their biggest events and their biggest sponsors, the biggest backers and all of them. And, but certainly it's one of those things that in the future, golf is going to remain a permanent part of the games. They'll have to look into all these tours together collectively and work it out to organize the schedule a lot better. The schedule next year is very congested in the summer. They're trying to fit so much into the small period of time with Olympic Games coming in August. So it's a difficult situation, but I think European Tour have done the sensible thing to protect their own interests.
And like I said, we will know better about this as the time unfolds, but right now we cannot say what's going to happen. It's going to be definitely a pickle there for both of the tours, who's going to play where. Let's see. We have other tournaments that were this past weekend. Yeah, there was something else on the PGA Tour, and it was the Barracuda Championship, where J.J. Henry won it for the second time in 4 years. He beat Kyle Rifers with a 15-foot eagle putt from the fringe on the second playoff hole to win it. It's the second time he wins this tournament. He also won it in 2012. His other PGA Tour title came in 2006 in his home state of Connecticut. So he jumped from 150 to 76 in the FedEx Cup standings and got a spot on the PGA Championship this weekend. On the Champions Tour, Jeff Maggard won there the Shaw Charity Classic on Sunday by 4 strokes. He beat playing partners Miguel Angel Jimenez and Colin Montgomery, who were sharing the lead entering the final round. Maggard won. Earned $352,500 to take the money lead and moving to second place behind Montgomery in the season-long Charles Schwab Cup race. And in the Web.com Tour, hey, you know, everyone dare you to name a golf show that brings you tomorrow's winners today, more often than the Backline Report. We have consistently followed young stars and even not so young golfers that go on to bigger things. Last week, we talked about Martin Piller and his wife, Jirina, as golf's power couple and how they have been finding their stride in their respective tours. Well, this past weekend, Martin, you know, he apparently heard us, and he won the Digital Alley Open on Sunday for his second Web.com Tour victory of the year, matching the tournament record scoring of 26 under. The 29-year-old Piller closed with a 6 under 65 at the Nicklaus Golf Club at Lionsgate to tie the mark set by James Smithers in 2011. He earned $108,000 to jump from 5th to 2nd on the money list, more than enough for PGA Tour card next season. He won the Boise Open last month and has 5 career tour titles. You know, we are like Panasonic used to say, just slightly ahead of our time predicting things here. And finally, I have to say that Europe named its first four players on Sunday for the team to face the United States in the next month's Solheim Cup. So Sam Pedersen of Norway, Gladys Nochette of France, Charlie Hall, and Melissa Reed of England took the automatic places in the 12-member team. Reed secured her spot after finishing in a tie for fifth in the Deep Sports Masters in Czech Republic on Sunday. Karen Koch, the captain, will complete her lineup on August 25th when she names the next four automatic qualifiers from the world's rankings and her four wildcards. So, Fred, how about these other tournaments and this news? Pieces of news here on the weekend.
Yeah, J.J. Henry, second hole playoff win over Reifers. It's his third career PGA Tour win in 17 years. Now 40 years old, so, you know, this is kind of a big win for him. He can kind of slide into his mid-40s here and, you know, have status and, you know, maybe one more win along the way or, you know, a couple good years and he's going to make it to 50. They did use a Stableford point system. He finished with 47 points and tied with Reifers. Did you notice that David Toms, Retief Goosen, and Steve Flesch had very good weeks? So there's some names from the past that jumped up their leaderboard. And I found this tremendously funny, guys. Did you see Andres Gonzalez smash that sign with his hand? And, you know, he heard it pretty good. He played 4 holes with just his putter and had to withdraw. I find that just totally hilarious because I get it. I understand. You know how mad you get at yourself on the golf course. I do that almost every time I play. Jeff Maggart, as you mentioned, now moves up to number 2 with his win in the Shaw Charity Classic up in Canada in the Charles Schwab Cup behind Monty. He bumps Langer back down to 3rd. I found that... very interesting that we just talked about Martin Pallar last week, and then he jumps up and wins this week on the web.com. So, yeah, and, you know, the Solheim Cup, that's coming up real quick. It's going to jump up on us here. And, you know, it looks like the next four, if you looked at the next four today, you'd be looking at, I think, Anna Nordqvist, Sandra Gall, Carlotta Segunda, and Catriona Matthew. And then you've still got... Azahara Munoz, Laura Davies, Karini Shea, and a couple young players to draw from for the final four. So Karen Koch has her work cut out for her there. You've got 8 players in for the U.S. Team, and looks like the other two from the Rolex rankings are pretty well set, Lizette Salas, Paula Kramer. And then you've got some younger ladies, and, you know, what is Inkster pick for her 2 picks? So, yeah, that Solheim Cup's coming up pretty soon, guys.
How about your take on this weekend, the rest of the action, Kieran?
Yeah, well, looking at the Barracuda Championship, the modified Stableford event, and interesting that J.J. Henry won that. We all remember he played actually on the Ryder Cup team 9 years ago at the K Club, which was probably a bit of a surprise to everybody at the time. And that team was fascinating for me for the Americans. You had J.J. Henry and Brett Weserich and Vaughn Taylor. The two of those guys have completely disappeared, and J.J. Henry occasionally pops up and does something, so that may have just been, no offense to those guys, may have been the weakest U.S. team in recent memory. But great win for him, and obviously he's won that event now twice since it's actually changed to that format, so he clearly enjoys the more aggressive play you have to do, making birdies and eagles and accumulating those points. You can cope, you can have a disaster, and you can get over it quite easily, a bit like match play in that respect. And like Fred, I also noted the success of the older players, particularly Steve Flesch, who has been doing a lot of work this year for Fox Sports, I think, on the commentary. So he's been quite good at that, and he's went back playing, and I think this is actually his first top 10 finish in over 4 years. So, you know, great stuff for him. He's someone who's edging towards the Champions Tour age, so he can still play some good golf, it certainly shows. And also, Patrick Rogers missed out in the playoff by a single point. You know, we're waiting to see him break through and get that first win, a player with so much ability and so much talent and so much hype when he turned professional after his great success at Stanford University. So that first win for him is going to come very soon. It almost did happen last weekend. And looking at the Champions Tour, you know, Jeff Maggart's played brilliantly this year, 4 wins this year, including the 2 majors. And, you know, I've always He's also been a fantastic player, and I've always really liked his golf swing, and he's a good, very solid iron player, good ball striker. But what surprised me was how poorly Colin Montgomery and Miguel Angel Jimenez played on Sunday, shooting 70 and 74 respectively. You expect better from those two players. So one of those kind of, you know, bad days happened for everyone, but certainly Jeff Maggart, you know, made the most of that and shot a great turnaround to win there. And as you say, the power couple of the Pillars and Martin got his second win in just a few weeks. Perhaps that will inspire Jirina now to go and get her first win on the LPGA. We'll have to wait and see. And on the Solheim Cup, I noted the players that they were now qualified for Europe, the first four players. Suzanne Pettersson, who will make her eighth appearance in the biannual competition, as well as Gladys Nocera. Charlie Hulde, of course, played brilliantly in her debut 2 years ago. And Melissa Reid, who makes a welcome return to the team after 4 years. She has had a fascinating career, up and down career, really. She had great success early on, won in 2010 for the first time, won twice in 2011, and played on the Solheim Cup team in Ireland that year, which was successful. But then in 2012, her mother was tragically killed in a car accident, and she won the event remarkably just a few weeks after that. However, you know, that loss did take its toll. She had a couple of difficult years on the golf course, and maybe lost a bit of motivation, lost her feel for the game, a love for the game. But she has refound that last year, and she's played brilliantly this year, and she won, obviously, early in the year in Turkey. So good to see Melissa Reid back, and the Solheim Cup is always a highlight on the calendar, I think, every couple of years. And Europe have won the last two of them, so they're going for three in a row in Germany, which would be unprecedented, given the event was generally dominated by the US women. So it will be a fascinating event in a couple of months' time, and you know, two very strong teams are forming for it, so it should be a good watch.
It definitely will, and I look forward also to see Gladys Nocera from France. You know, she's also coming back after 2009 was the last time she played there. She has a 5-3-2 total record on the Solheim Cup, and she's been playing excellent there in the Ladies European Tour. Finally, we'll get to see her at the Solheim Cup. Well, that wraps up our weekend backspin. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have our two VIGs of the week. So nobody go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our very important guest of the week segment. We have two of them. The first one that we're going to bring to you is Luke Elvey, the Aussie golf broadcaster extraordinary, who is at Whistling Straits, and Fred had a chance to talk to him. So, Fred, how about this interview with Luke Elvey?
Yeah, kind of interesting. I remember him from a couple years ago doing the broadcast from Australia for the along with Ian Baker Finch, I think for Channel 10 down there, for the Aussie Masters, the Australian Open, and the PGA down there. He's been doing some segments with Golf Channel over the years, and I happened to the person that invited me to come and play Crystal Downs last weekend had also invited Luke. When I'd seen him a year or so ago, but if he came through this part of the world to give him a call, and he could play Crystal and a couple other courses in Michigan. And so he took him up on it. He saw that Whistling Straits was only 70 miles from Frankfort, Michigan, the only problem being that Lake Michigan sets in between on those 70 miles. So, nonetheless, he came over and played a little golf, and so we got to play with him a little bit. He has actually moved from Australia now. He's relocated to Banff, Alberta, Canada, and is pursuing a full-time announcing position with a network here in the U.S. So we just had a great time playing some golf, and after we were done, he allowed me to tape a short segment with him because he was on his way to Whistling Straits this week.
So let's play that segment.
We are here at beautiful Crystal Downs Golf Club in Frankfort, Michigan. And we happen to play with Luke Elvey today, originally from Australia, now living in Canada. and doing some freelance broadcasting for CBS and some of the other companies. Great to play with you today and meet you today, Luke.
You too. I think, Fred, if you can ever start an interview, here we are at Crystal Downs. You know you've had a very special day. And regardless of how we've played, this will be one of those moments that we'll remember forever.
Yeah, what a fantastic place, and would urge any listener that would possibly have a chance to get up in this part of the world in northwest Michigan. It's really a place to see and get to play. But, Luke, we want to talk a little bit about you. You grew up in Australia. You started in broadcasting down there, and we saw you doing the Golf Channel coverage through an Australian feed several years ago.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough in 2010 to be fronting Network 10's coverage of the Australian Summer of Golf, which fortunately for me included Ian Baker Finch and Wayne Grady, a couple of my countrymen, and two of the finer golfers we've ever delivered. Now Ian has really proven himself to be one of the great broadcasters in golf worldwide, and through his great friendship and mentorship, I've now found myself here in the United States trying to beat a similar path. I'm more the front man, lead play-by-play commentator, and obviously having the opportunity to do that in the secondary teams with CBS, ESPN, PGA Tour Entertainment, it's been thrilling.
Yeah, I understand you kind of relocated to Banff, Canada. It's a long way from Australia to Banff.
It certainly is. It's a long way from Australia to anywhere, Fred, to be honest. I was making too many commutes in a year. I did the trip seven times last year alone, and I've got a young family. My wife's from Banff in Canada, so it made sense that commuting from Calgary to anywhere in the United States is actually quite convenient. And, you know, we've got the PGA Championship going on at Whistling Straits next week, which I'm looking forward to. So these opportunities that are coming up, it's a no-brainer to take them because I'm so close.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. You've had the opportunity to cover all the majors this year. You saw Spieth's outstanding performance at the Masters, the U.S. Open, and then just coming up a little bit short at St. Andrews. From all the golf you've covered, I mean, that's got to be a pretty big story.
Well, it's one of the biggest, let's be honest. I was fortunate enough to do a lot of Tiger's events. Seeing his rise and now subsequent fall has been probably the biggest story in golf. But what Jordan Spieth doing here this year, it's quite extraordinary, and the way he started it all off at the Masters in record-breaking fashion. The only record that he tied was Tiger's 18-under final tournament score. And then to follow it up and play the way he did at Chambers Bay. And if he wins next week at Kohler, Wisconsin, he could be one shot short of the Grand Slam. Now, this was something that was achieved in 1930 by the great Bobby Jones, and then Tiger did four tournaments in a row, 2000, 2001, and both of those feats, people thought, well, that'll never happen again, once they happened. And here we are, watching a 21-year-old, just turning 22, potentially a shot away from the Grand Slam, when no one really thought he would win one of the four majors this year. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, also, and you know, the Australians have you know, they've been having great seasons over the years. Of course, Greg Norman and some of the other great names. But Jason Day has popped up and been having an outstanding year. He's been strong for the last two or three. Of course, he had the vertigo problem out in Washington, but has really had a great year.
Well, we've had a great run from 2011. I wrote a story for Australian media back in 2011. No one was ever going to fill Greg Norman's shoes. They were just too big. But in Jason Day and Adam Scott, we've had one fill one shoe and one fill the other. And over the last 5 years, those two as a combination have really reignited Australian golf. And then you have the likes of the Mark Leishmans, Jeff Ogilvy, John Sendon, Matt Jones, Stephen Bowditch won this year again. Players just poking their head up, giving themselves a chance. And it's been thrilling for Australians to have our guys in the mix. Sadly, we've had just the one major to show for it, but if it was going to be any of the four, we're glad it was the Masters in 2013 because it was Australia's sports Everest. No one had scaled that summit before, and when Adam won that, he became a national hero. And we feel with Jason, he's going to do much the same because he's really already contended a couple and he's contended all the majors. So, you know, if he doesn't win the PGA this year, he'll win a number of majors going forward very shortly.
Yeah, and of course, I'm from Ohio. Of course, we claim Jason Day now as an Ohioan, so we're pulling for him, too. Well, Luke, it's been a pleasure meeting you today and talking with you, and I hope you'll allow us to contact you from time to time and do a little bit for us every once in a while.
Pleasure, Fred. As long as we're talking about someone else's golf game rather than our own, we'll be fine. It was a real treat.
This is the Ohio thing on golf, so you just...
heard about it. So anyway, Kieran, any thoughts on Luke Elvey's interview?
Well, he sounds like a very nice guy, and I only know from him on Twitter. I obviously haven't heard much of his broadcasting, but I'm sure he's very passionate about the game. You can see that from his Twitter. He's very passionate about his Australian players, and he certainly backs those guys, Adam Scott and Jason Day and so on, and obviously he was delighted to see Adam Scott win the Masters a couple of years ago. As he said, there's so many near misses in that event for Australian players, you know, none more so than Greg Norman, who came up so agonisingly short at Augusta National down the year. So he looks an interesting guy, and certainly wish him well with his broadcasting career in North America.
Fred, our next VIG is Jason Mangle. He's the tournament director for the PGA Championship. So how about that interview?
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. I have to say, though, what other golf show goes to the ends of the earth to bring you news and information? We got Luke Elvey from Australia. We got Kieran from Scotland. We got you sitting in Puerto Rico. We got the world covered, man. People need to listen to us. We know what's going on.
Hey,
we are really lacking, though, Fred. We've got most of the world covered, but we are lacking either a Russian guest or a Chinese guest.
Well, we brought one from China last year.
Oh yeah, we did. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yes. So, no, from China.
We've been there. We've done that.
I do apologize. We are demographically internationally covered. All four corners of the globe. We certainly have those covered. That's for sure.
Yeah, hey, we had a chance to talk to Jason Mangle, the tournament director for the PGA Championship this week at Whistling Straits, on Back Nine Report last year, right after the PGA Championship at Valhalla. And if you can imagine, he is very busy this week, but took a few minutes to chat with us about this week's tournament, Rory coming back, and tell us a little bit about Whistling Straits, what's happening there, and what condition it is. So, Carlos, go ahead.
We have Jason Mangle, who's the tournament director for the PGA Championship this week at Whistling Straits, actually for his second visit to Back Nine Report. And Jason, we are happy to have you back to tell us about the exciting week about to take place in Kohler, Wisconsin.
Yeah, hard to believe after the last time we talked that here we are, and we're actually in championship week. The gates are open. Spectators are here. The best players in the world are on property, and away we go.
Hey, what's the activity level in Kohler this week?
It is definitely ramped up a notch from normal. I'm sure not many of the listeners out there might be familiar with the Village of Kohler, which is normally about 2,000 people. Certainly a regular flow of guests staying at Destination Kohler and playing the great golf courses that they have here. But there'll be a few more people in the neighborhood this week with the PGA Championship going on, and we're very excited to kind of show off all the hard work that we've been putting together over the past 2 years of planning.
Yeah, Kohler is not really an urban area. It kind of sits in between Milwaukee and Green Bay. It's actually about an hour and a half or 2 hours north of Chicago, maybe a little bit more than that?
Yeah, just depending on where you're coming from in Chicago, it's about 2 hours north. And we're right in the middle of along Lake Michigan between Green Bay and Milwaukee. So just about an hour drive from city center of either of those areas. So we're actually fortunate enough that means we're pulling guests and corporate clients from really all over the state of Wisconsin and across the Midwest.
You know, we talked a little bit about the excitement level there. It has to be ramped up a little bit with Rory deciding to come and try to play this week also, right?
Yeah, we're excited to have 98 of the top 100 players in the game, one of the strongest fields in major championship golf, take on the Straits course. Of course, that means Rory McIlroy. I'm sure everybody saw that he was out here over the weekend playing a practice round. We're looking forward to seeing if he can defend his title from last year at Valhalla.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the course. I know you have contingency plans in place for weather that may pop up this week, but going in, what kind of conditions is the course in? What can we expect?
It's in fantastic shape. The team at Whistling Straits, led by Mike Lee and Chris Zugel, they're the best in the business. They've done such a great job getting the course in major championship-ready condition. And if anyone's played here, normally it's in fantastic shape, but it is by all means ready to go and test the best players in the world.
What about the weather? What are you looking for? What do you expect?
Yeah, we've got a little rain earlier in the week, but by the time we get to further in the week, we should be fine. You know, one unique aspect of the Straits course is it sits right along the shores of Lake Michigan, and that means that the weather is constantly changing. And I think back to, you know, we were here in February, and it was cold, and there was a couple feet of snow on the ground. We won't see that, thankfully, but we should see some fantastic temperatures. It's been a really nice summer across the Midwest, but especially here on the shores of Lake Michigan, so we're looking forward to that continuing on throughout championship week.
Whistling Straits has hosted major championships before. Is there anything that we might watch for that maybe is a little different this week? Is there any changes in store for us?
Not much has changed inside the ropes. You know, when you have two successful PGA championships, both ending in playoffs and both producing a worthy PGA champion, there's not many changes needed there. But outside the ropes, we're fortunate that we can look back on those two events and say, hey, these things, they worked great, or maybe there's an area or two we could have improved upon. And so we definitely have a number of spectator and corporate client enhancements that will be different this time around. And really that starts from people driving up from Milwaukee or Chicago. There's a new dedicated off-ramp of I-43 that'll help get you to the property a little quicker. And once there in the south parking lot, we've got about four times the number of parking lot shuttles helping you get to the scan gate a little quicker from your vehicle. And then once you get to the scan gate, you'll immediately run into our brand-new championship shop. So our merchandise team has done a wonderful job getting that facility ready, and it's almost like walking into a department store on the middle of the golf course. From there, we've got a streamlined main entrance plan that'll get you to the clubhouse at 9 and 18 green, and actually 25% less steps than 2010. We actually walked it out and got the numbers. And then if you're fortunate enough to be here invited by one of our corporate clients, we've got all new corporate locations that are as good as I've ever seen at any of our events, closer to the action, closer to the views of Lake Michigan. If you have a Wanamaker Club ticket, the facility, the Wanamaker Club for us, is an upgraded kind of sports bar-like atmosphere. That sold out within 2 months of going on sale last year. It's in the best location we've ever had it at any PGA championship. But we've also added over 1,000 new bleacher seats on property. We've got some great new concession items kind of highlighting the local flair. So you can imagine in Sheboygan County, that means a lot of brats and a lot of cheese. So excited across the board for all these new items to be rolled out.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure to attend some PGA run events, and I got to say, PGA spares no expense. They do a really great job on setting these things up. Hey, we remember back the last time we were there, Dustin Johnson had that slight problem with, was it or wasn't it a bunker on the 72nd hole? Has anything been done to address the bunker issues with the players besides just a memo? Or, you know, what's going on with that? Can you tell us?
Well, it'll certainly be top of mind, you know, obviously with what happened last time. But I will say I think Dustin handled that situation as well as anyone could have expected, and certainly wish him well coming back here this week. What a story that would be for him to break through here after what happened 5 years ago. But I will say Kerry Hague and our rules committee have taken a long, hard look at that. They've determined it's going to play the same way as it did in 2010. And with it being so top of mind, of course, I expect caddies and players to be thinking of that when they're on the golf course. But we've done everything we can to make sure that message is in all the areas that the players will come across at the locker room, the caddy headquarters, contestant registration. So I'm certain that everyone will be aware of that rule.
Well, for the Sheboygan, Kohler area, I mean, this has to be just a huge economic impact on the whole southeast Wisconsin area. Do you have some numbers you could share with us or some ideas of that?
Sure. The last championship, last PGA championship that we have a study from was what the state of New York did around the 2013 PGA at Oak Hill. And what they found was the economic impact from a PGA championship was actually north of $102 million on the area. And, of course, that's visitors coming in and stays in hotel room nights and meals out. It's also taxes generated directly through the event. But one unique aspect that I don't think most people think about it is the temporary jobs that are created around a championship. You know, we're typically around 1,000, 1,100 jobs that are created. Now, some of those are in the state, like our team, for 2 years and upwards. And some of them are during the summer of the build-out, helping with construction. And yet more are during the week of the event, coming in and helping out with staffing concessions and service positions. So that's a substantial number, and we would anticipate similar impact here in Sheboygan County.
Well, Jason, again, we want to thank you for taking a few minutes out of what I'm sure is a very busy week for you. We can't wait to see all the beautiful pictures from Whistling Straits and the easy competition for this year's last major. So good luck and have a great week.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the first ball being hit Thursday morning by Wisconsin's own Ryan Helmanen, and then we'll be off and awarding the Wanamaker Trophy before you know it.
Well, have a good one. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks so much.
Kieran, any quick thoughts on Jason Mingle's interview before we move on to our practicing?
All I would say is it was an interesting little insight into some of the work and the construction of all these championships and the infrastructure of them, the organization behind the stands and the preparations every major. You forget about this, that, you know, all four majors, other than Augusta National, obviously being a massive being there the same every year, but the other three travel around. And the work that was behind that is monumental, and it's growing all the time. The infrastructure of the major championships is growing every single year. The U.S. Open, and you know, the Open Championship in particular, look at St. Andrews this year, the amount of grandstands they had up there and hospitality pavilions, and it was a massive, almost military effort to run that event smoothly. And I'm sure it's the same with the PGA Championship. So the events are getting bigger and bigger every single year, and certainly, you know, massive impact on the local economies that they touch. So it's a... You know, the major championships are important in so many ways, and I think that was a bit of an insight into how they bring so much money and temporary work to people in each local area that the championships are contested in.
Fred, any final thoughts on that interview before we move on?
No, we'll talk about the bunkers and that kind of thing in a little bit when we talk about Whistling Straits a little bit more. But, Kieran, you mentioned about the work... He's actually been on site there for 2 years getting ready for this week. And I forgot to ask him where he's going next. I'll send him an email and find out. But he'll probably jump out to where they're going 2 years from now. I'm not even sure where that is. But, they put a lot of time and effort into this thing. And he was really excited when it wrapped up last year down at Kentucky. They were in the home stretch then getting ready for this week. So, congrats to them. They put on a great show every year.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we have the rest of the show for you to dedicate to our massive wall-to-wall preview coverage of the 97th edition of the PGA Championship. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic. This week, there's nothing to pick. There's only one big thing going on, and it's the last major of the PGA Tour. And, hey, the final major of the PGA Tour season, which is the PGA Championship, appears to have crept upon us quickly with Zach Johnson's Open victory, just feeling like it happens just a few moments ago. It often gets moved aside for the traditional majors, and it's only considered slightly better than the players in some circles. Hey, but don't be fooled. The top 100 players automatically qualify, whilst tournament winners in the past 12 months also get a spot, as well as some of the PGA pros that got through their own qualification process. So this is a huge event with an unbelievable history and the very best players at this moment. A history that includes some memorable moments as well, like Y.E. Yang defeating Tiger in 2009, the new boy Keegan Bradley toppling the world in 2010, Rich Beam and his heroics in 2002, Sean Mitchell in 2003. We could really go on, but there are so many magnificent sporting stories that come to the fore with this fourth major. So here we go, one last push, one final hurdle. The golfing major season will come to a head at the Pete Dye Classic, as arguably the best field of the four big ones battle it out to win the PGA Championship. This is a tournament that has a huge field and will be played over a superb golf course this year, which is the Straits course at Whistling Straits in Kohler, Wisconsin. Whistling Straits is a course that depends on the course management, where distance from the tee will help, but it's not a necessity. The Peak Dye layout will play as a 7,512-yard par 72, and it's chiseled along the shores of Lake Michigan. There's absolutely no doubting there's a resemblance to Placid Links tracks often found in Ireland, and even Chambers Bay in some regards. But as it score, you have an American track that can be overpowered in good conditions and a bit inviting tough, windy weather. This is one. On the surface, you would think that driving accuracy will be key, but Vijay Singh and Martin Kaymer were nowhere near the top end in those stat categories. And looking back at their performances, it seems far more important to have your irons in full flow. Hitting the small, tough greens is no easy feat, especially trying to stop the ball. Therefore, the usual links skill of scrambling will be vital for a 2015 winner. So, Kieran, you get the first crack at this. How about the history and the course for the PGA Championship?
Well, the PGA Championship, you know, when it comes around every single August, I always think there's a little tinge of regret for all golf fans when it's the last major, and we know after this week, after the Wanamaker Trophy is lifted triumphantly by whoever claims the title on Sunday, we won't have another major until April, another full 8 months away, because the major season is so congested every summer, which is a little bit of a disappointment. But the PGA itself, it is in many ways the least distinguished of the four majors, partly because of where it is in the schedule. It comes fourth in the schedule, and it only seems natural in that case that it would be the fourth least popular or least significant in that respect. However, I think there's more to it than that. You know, it lacks some of the unique characteristics that you see in the other majors. It doesn't have the aura of being played in the same course every year like the Masters has, that unique special place in spring that Augusta National is, and also lacks the stature of being America's national championship like the U.S. Open. And obviously the Open Championship is the most unique of the majors, being the only one played outside of the United States. However, I think in many ways that weakness in terms of the PGA's being distinctive and being unique, and also in its kind of promotional sense, I think that in a way is its positive, most positive attribute, because with PGA, it's quite simply, it's about the golf. And you know, the guys, PGA of America, when they set up the golf courses, they aren't twisted or warped very much like their contemporaries at the USGA are. So the PGA Championship, the story for me is always about the players, and that's a positive thing. Unlike the U.S. Open many times, and indeed sometimes at the Open Championship, the story at the PGA is always about the players. They go out, they set a golf course that is usually perfectly playable, it's usually fairly scorable, and good golf will be rewarded, and that's how it should be. And I think in the past, and I see no reason why it can't be this week, we've seen some genuinely fantastic finishes in the PGA, not least last year at Valhalla, when we had Rory and Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson battling on the back nine, birdies around left, right and centre. It was a thrilling finish to the major season. And for the PGA, you know, it does lag behind the other majors in many respects, but it has got an immensely strong field. 97 of the world's top 100 players are there this week. And, you know, it's the players' last chance this year to achieve major glory. And for me, the majors are always, and always will be, separate from the everything else in the game. They are by far still the pinnacle in the game, even though in recent times we've had initiatives and concepts like the FedEx Cup or the Race to Dubai. They've been brought in to try and bridge that gap between the PGA and the Masters with some meaningful action. However, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing particularly compelling about watching rich guys simply competing to become richer. However, the PGA, like the other majors, the motivator for the players is the trophy, is that opportunity to become part of golf and sporting history. That's what motivates the players, and that's what, in this modern day of sport where money is a massive thing, for me, it's a romantic sense of the trophy is what matters most for the players and also for the fans. We watch because we want to see history being made. And the PGA, it may be the fourth major, but there's nothing wrong with being the fourth biggest event in the game. And I'm sure it has all the potential to be a fascinating week with so many great storylines. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about this year, and it's going to be fantastic.
Fred, how about your take on the history and the course here for the PGA Championship?
Yeah, a couple things. You know, this championship started, the first one was held in 1916, and then they didn't play in 1917, 1918 due to World War I. and they picked back up again in 1919. And Jim Barnes from England won the first two PGA championships that were contested in 16 and 19. And then beginning in 1921, Walter Hagen won five of the next 7 years. Gene Therazen won in 22 and 23, but Hagen won in 21 and then finished out from 24 to 27. So that really set the tone. Walter Hagen was the, you know, he was the prima donna. He was the, would grace the first pages of all the newspapers, adorn the sports pages. So he was the big golf hero back then, and was the Arnold Palmer of the era kind of thing. So, you know, that really kind of got the PGA Championship going. You know, as Kieran said, he's excited about it. I feel a little bit let down when the PGA comes around every year. I don't know why. I got to tell you, I am not as excited about the PGA Championship as I was certainly for the Open Championship, and certainly not as much as I was for the U.S. Open Championship, and I'm always sky high for the Masters. So, but again, it is a major. It has tremendous history. It has had tremendous winners. As Kieran said, they play for the trophy. It's, you know, yeah, they get $1.8 million or whatever it is for the win, but and they get big endorsement dollars. It's a big boost in their career, but they're playing for it to get their name on that Wanamaker Trophy. The course, I could talk all day about that, but I won't do that because I know you'd mute me. did you guys happen to see Matt Ginella's piece on the Golf Channel with Herb Kohler and Pete Dye? It is absolutely priceless. If you missed it, I'm sure you can catch it on Matt Ginella's Facebook feed or on YouTube. I recommend highly going and watching it. Really, really good stuff. He tells of the arguments and the disagreements between Mr. Dye and Mr. Kohler when they were building Black Wolf Run and then Whistling Straits. Both men are stubborn, committed, and devoted to making the best golf course possible. Dye is the consummate artist, but ultimately Kohler writes the checks. So they've had some real they've come to butting heads several times over the years, but they remain friends, and they love working together. So they have created some real masterpieces there. I've had the pleasure to see them a couple times. Black Wolf Run was opened in 1988, 10 years before Whistling Straits, actually. It has hosted two U.S. Women's Opens, one in 1998 and another in 2012. But Herb Kohler wanted another course that would attract major championships. And so he got Pete Dye to come back. He got the property. It was an old airport up there on the north side of Sheboygan. And he actually got the PGA and the USGA in a bidding war over Whistling Straits, who was going to hold major there. And the PGA ended up winning. They offered more stuff. So, you know, the U.S. Women's Open has been held at Black Wolf Run. The USGA has been there, but the PGA got Whistling Straits. So, 1998, Whistling Straits opened. It's two 18-hole courses, the Irish and the Straits. The Straits features, you know, 1,000 bunkers and 8 holes right along the cliffs above Lake Michigan that are just stunning. The tricky winds off the lake affect the ball flight and club selection. The air is heavy because of the dampness of the moisture from the lake. It's really quite something. The Irish course doesn't get talked about much. It's a little bit more inland, but resembles more what you might see in Scotland or Ireland, kind of a thing. But they're beautiful properties. Just sitting on the veranda, having lunch or a drink, and looking out over the course at the players out there playing. It's truly, truly a beautiful place. And if you ever get the chance, I urge everyone to stop in there and take a look at it.
And now let's talk a little bit about the storylines. There are plenty of it, and I know that Kieran and Fred will have more on it. But let's start first with the people that got in late Martin Laird, J.J. Henry, and Sean O'Hare are the latest entries to the PGA Championship. Martin Laird was the first alternate and go in when Shane Lowry won the Bridgestone Invitational. You know, Lowry was already eligible, but because five players at Firestone were not eligible, the PGA kept open one spot. That's how he got in. J.J. Henry, well, he got the 156th spot on Sunday by winning the Barracuda Championship in Nevada in the playoff. Then Graham Dallet of Canada withdrew on Monday because of an injury to his left thumb. He was replaced by Sean O'Hare, who had moved up as the first alternate. That moves Carl Pedersen up to first alternate, followed by Daniel Summerhays and Willie McGirt. Regarding Graham Dallet, you know, this is the same injury that forced him to withdraw from the Canadian Open last month. It's not clear how much time he will be away, but Dallet is number 99 in the FedEx Cup with only two events remaining until the playoffs. He's replaced, like I said, by Sean O'Hare, so let's see what happens with him. Well, about Jordan Spieth, he might have missed out on doing the Grand Slam this year. Like Luke Elvey mentioned, if he would go on to win here, he would be one stroke away from winning the Grand Slam. But if he can win here this week, he will still have made some significant history. Also, the defending champion, Rory McIlroy, he's back after his ankle injury that made him miss the Open Championship. There are obviously huge question marks over his fitness, but he'll be gunning to defend his title and get back to playing competitively again. Missed the playoff here in 2010 by only a shot. The last time, you know, the PGA Championship was here at Whistling Straits, Martin Kaymer beat Bubba Watson in a playoff, and we all remember what happened with Dustin Johnson as well. You know, McIlroy says he's 100%. His game appears to be in order. He's talking about golf, not soccer. You know, and he even said that he was putting even while he was in a boot to keep his ankle steady. So we'll see what he brings up. You know, Fred, you and I got some text in yesterday and Sunday. We talked about it's incredible that, you know, all the mention of the names. When I saw the first commercials for the PGA Championship television showing, all I saw was Jordan Spieth, I saw Ricky Fowler, I saw Rory McIlroy. I didn't see mentions of Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. What's happening to them? You know, they're fading away slightly, even though Tiger appears to be playing a little bit better. He seems to be getting, you know, rising his game, but it's just incredible. We don't get that mention from Phil and Tiger, so how about the storyline spread for this weekend's 97th PGA Championship?
Yeah, they are quite a few, and I'll just limit it down here to five or six that I have jotted down. But you know, Jordan Spieth, what he has done this year. Luke Elvey talked about it. You know, probably second only to the tremendous fall of Tiger Woods. Or what Tiger has accomplished over the last 15 years. But what Jordan has done over the last 3 years is truly phenomenal. And what he's done this year, if he could be at the top of the leaderboard or near it here come Sunday, that would truly be amazing. That's got to be the number one storyline for me. And then the second thing is Dustin Johnson. You know, can he erase the memories of 2010? Was it a bunker? Wasn't a bunker? You know what? You know, that was just really unfortunate, that whole thing. But if he could come back and win this thing, and that would really, to get his first major and at a place where he experienced some real problems, that would really be a big story. And I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but they actually have put a grandstand over that bunker, so it's not even possible to get in it now. Whistling Straits course itself, you know, I talked about it a little bit, but then you've got the weather, the wind, the rain, the fog, Lake Michigan, it's damp. So how will that affect the play? The players are going to have to think about all that stuff when they pull a club and how they're going to strike it. So the guy that's going to win this week is really going to have to be on his game, because it's a real test of hitting your mark, knowing your game, what you can do, and then accepting the adversity and turning it around when that happens. Will Tiger make a cut? You know, as you said, a big story, you know, is nobody's even talking about him. So does he slip in under the radar and do well? For me, if he just made the cut, again, that's probably positive progress. And then the last thing I just have down here is, you know, how will Fowler, Justin Rose, Jason Day, Adam Scott finish? Those guys all could be contenders. They're all playing well coming in. So I like the young field. I like the players are all playing well coming in, as we talked about coming out of the Bridgestone, coming off the Open Championship. So I think it should be a really great test of golf at Whistling Straits, and I think it's a really great, great field that we're looking at.
Before I go to you, Kieran, let me say that, you know, Jordan Spieth does not have to win the PGA Championship to replace Rory McIlroy at the one, at number one in the world. In fact, he might not even get there if he wins his third major. You know, the official World Golf Ranking laid out the following scenarios for Spieth to get to number one, and I'm going to quickly mention them. The first one would be Spieth wins and McIlroy finishes in a two-way tie for second or worse. The second scenario would be Spieth finishing second alone and McIlroy's out of the top six. The third would be Spieth finishes in a two-way tie for second and McIlroy is out of the top 13. And the final one, you know, Spieth finishes in a three-way tie for second and McIlroy is out of the top 33. Now, the only way for Spieth to finish alone in third and to get number one is for McIlroy to miss the cut. So a lot of things can happen, a lot of storylines, and that's one that we are going to be certainly looking forward to see, not only if Jordan Spieth wins, but if he can take number one away from McIlroy. So how about that and all the other storylines that you have, Kieran?
Well, that's right, Carlos, and that's an interesting subplot. We'll see this week the battle for the world number one spot, and obviously that will be, you know, really paramount and obvious to us, given the fact that Rory and Jordan are playing together the first two rounds, so that will be in the conversation, certainly that battle for world number one. And Jordan Spieth uniquely, most players don't actually mention or state their ambition to become world number one. They mention, oh, I want to win tournaments, I want to win majors, but he actually has come out and said he wants to be the best player ranked officially in the world, and so he's going for that, and Rory's back this week. It's going to be fascinating to see those two duel. But Jordan Spieth has to be the number one story this week, which is quite a statement given that Rory's coming back. That's just a testament to how brilliant, how extraordinary Jordan's been this year. You know, as Luke Elvey said, you know, he was one shot away from winning the first three majors of the year, and which potentially win the first three majors of the year, given he'd been a playoff at St. Andrews. But you know, that was, it's a monumental thing. And for me, what happened at St. Andrews, when Jordan holed that long putt on the 16th to tie for the lead at the time, he made the improbable, the near impossible, seem like it was going to happen. And that in itself was something truly remarkable, a great achievement, a gift to us as fans. And we will talk about that for years to come. And I do believe that if Jordan wins this week, I think it is almost undisputedly the finest major championship season that we have ever seen since the idea of the four majors became together. You can go back to Tiger in 2000 when he won those three majors, the US Open, the Open, and the PGA. He finished fifth in the Masters that year as well, six shots behind the winner, Vijay Singh. And Arnold Palmer won the first two majors in 1960, finished second at the Open Championship, one shot behind Kel Nagel, and finished tied seventh at the PGA. So I think if Jordan wins this, for me, that is something that will be truly historic, and it will secure his place in sporting immortality. What he's done, you know, and he's won in different ways. You know, he won at the Masters in a dominant fashion, leading wire to wire. No one had done that since Raymond Floyd back in 1976. That's leading a major championship, even any event overnight, is a difficult thing to handle. He did it for four straight days as a young man, as a 21-year-old, on one of the world's most revered and, in many ways, potentially damaging golf courses. It's a very punishing place, Augusta National, when your mind isn't quite there. He overcame that and pieced around and plotted his way around the golf course immaculately with a deft putting touch that separated him from the rest of the field. Then at Chambers Bay, it was different. He won in a different but equally impressive manner when he came there, and he was patient on a very uncooperative and difficult golf course that resembled, it was a cross between a Disneyland roller coaster and the surface of the moon. It was an incredible place. But his patience and maturity as a golfer and resilience as a player as well shone through, and he made fewer mistakes than everyone else, and that led him to win the US Open. For me, that was in many ways even more impressive than what we saw at the Masters. And even perhaps greater than that was what he did at the Open Championship, with the pressure of history on his shoulders, not just in the media and expectancy from the fans, but from himself. He's someone who's ambitious. He wanted to go out there. He knew he had an opportunity to achieve true greatness and true history, and he came so close to doing it. And he was very unfortunate in the end. When he had that four-putt on the eighth hole at St Andrews, we thought that was the chances were over, but he came back with two straight birdies, and then birdie six, and he put himself right on the precipice of making history. You know, his mentality is so impressive, and that's what separates him from every other young player that we have seen for a long time. And as I say, if he was to win this week, it would be perhaps the greatest season, major season, in the history of the professional game. But you know, obviously, Rory McIlroy coming back is a massive thing, a big surprise to us all. When he damaged his ankle ligaments back in the start of July, we thought that was it for him. He was not going to come back. He missed the Open Championship. He missed the Bridgestone. We didn't expect to see him to come back until perhaps next year. So he's come back suddenly, perhaps a surprise, but he's certainly welcome. And he's come back, and he's looking good. He feels good. He wouldn't come back if he didn't feel good, to be honest with you. And I think Rory could potentially contend this week. You know, his talent is so great. He may have slight rust through his game, but he's pitching and putting. He's been maintaining that very well in the past 6 weeks. So I think Rory could come in here. He's played well here 5 years ago. He's played really well in the PGA Championship in recent years, winning it twice, obviously, in the past 3 years. I think Rory's had a very good week. And one thing we've lacked this year, and the majors this year have been fantastic, but one thing that we've lacked is perhaps a truly great head-to-head duel. You know, perhaps in the past we saw it with Watson and Nicholas and players like that. We haven't really seen that this year. But this week we have an opportunity with McIlroy and Spieth being there head-to-head Thursday and Friday. If we can carry that into the weekend, we could be witnessing something truly special. But my other storylines are obviously Jason Day. Can he rebound from the disappointment that he felt at St Andrews? He came back and won in Canada the week after. He's someone who's knocked on the door so many times in majors. Surely it's going to open for him eventually. And the same, of course, can be said for Dustin Johnson, who came so close again in a major at the US Open, and obviously led after 36 holes at St Andrews before falling apart in the weekend. And he's obviously had a devastating loss here 5 years ago. And the majors have been very unkind to Dustin. You know, look what happened at Chambers Bay. We saw what happened at Royal St. George's 4 years ago in the Open, and also at the US Open in 2010 at Pebble Beach. So these players here are so talented, as is Louis Oosthuizen, who's played brilliantly in the past two majors, the US Open and the Open. He carried that form into this major. So many great players who are playing well at the moment, and that is what's fascinating about this championship. The golf course itself is another story. I didn't touch on that in the past segment, but I'll mention it now. The golf course is very unique, very interesting, and I'm always very torn about Whistling Straits. You know, the PGA of America clearly like it. They've taken the PGA, their event here now, three times in the past 11 years, and Ryder Cup will come here in 2020. In many ways, it's kind of a excessively cartoonish design with 1,012 bunkers. It is somewhat over the top. However, that's typical Pete Dye. It's a very visually intimidating golf course, like any Pete Dye design is. But, you know, it's a fascinating test. It'll test every aspect of the player's game. As Fred mentions there, the strategy of you have to execute your iron shots perfectly, play for the conditions. Well, the weather forecast, I looked at it there. Only Friday is to be a little bit inclement in terms of perhaps some rain. The wind isn't to reach too high a level, so the conditions should be fairly favourable for the players, and also the conditions this week on the golf course are fairly. The golf course is apparently very soft compared to what it was 5 years ago and indeed 11 years ago. So I expect the scoring to actually be pretty good this week. I think double digits under par will probably win in the end. But you know, it's a tough golf course. It will punish you if you make mistakes, but certainly it allows players to score well if they play well. And that's exactly how it should be. So we have so many great storylines here. I haven't even talked about half of them, because the tournament is littered with them. So it's fascinating for me. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, if either of those two are in contention on Sunday, we are set for a very special final major weekend of 2015.
And now it's time for what you all wait for from us. Our picks to win the PGA Championship this year. Again, I'm going to take it right away because last time, you know, my guys here have been taking my guys that I, you know, my picks. So I'm going to go ahead and throw myself in the, under the bus right away. But anyway, my top five for this year, I'm going to say, you know, Zach Johnson. That's number five for me. You know, and you're going to be surprised for this top five because it doesn't include either Jordan Spieth, it doesn't include Rory McIlroy, or it doesn't include Ricky Fowler. So listen up. I have a number five, Zach Johnson. You know, he just comes from winning the Open, where he showed that he can navigate the minefield of bunkers with the rest of them, you know, and can he do it again now here in America? Well, he's going to have a great pressure, but he's a player that thrives under pressure. He finished tied for third in 2010 here at 10 under, so he has a great chance to do it again. Another player, number four, I have here, Henrik Stenson. His record at the year's final major is simply superb. The last five he's contested. The Swede boasts two top threes, a T4 and a T6, and he'll arrive for another crack at the back of a T6 at the WGC Bridgestone. So he again appears to be rounding into form at just the right time. He's still trying to give his country the first male major winner, but he's first in greens in regulation on the PGA Tour. You know, and he's just running into form, and I can't overlook him. Number three for me, Louis Oosthuizen. You know, he's playing great in the majors. He's finished back-to-back second places in the year's two-link course major events, and you all know how South Africans play. Their golf translates extremely well to links play, so I think Louis Oosthuizen is one that you have to look forward here. The other one, surprising, yes, it's going to be Bubba Watson. He's my number two. His current form is outstanding. I mean, those back-to-back second-place results, he's playing extremely well, playing extremely confident, and he was the one who lost to Martin Kaymer on a playoff in 2010 on this course, so that's my number two player. And my number one and pick to win is Jason Day. To me, this is the time. It's just a matter of time that when he was going to win a major. To me, this weekend, he's going to win. He's playing outstanding, and he showed that he can play the links course at St. Andrews. He's certainly got the vertigo down already, so I expect Jason Day to win. And my surprise pick would be Danny Willett. You know, that sixth place tie at the Open. He's a precision player off the box. You know, he's field leading driving accuracy at the WGC Invitational, even though he finished T17th. He's a rising star, and look forward to his showing on the Open, I mean on the PGA Championship this week. So, Kieran, how about you on your picks for the PGA Championship?
Oh, I'm really happy about this, leaving Fred to last. That's perfect.
Yeah,
thank you,
I know. We'll leave him, you know, the rest of the show.
I have a surprise. I have a surprise for you guys. I got a surprise.
He's got a surprise. Right. He hasn't picked Sergio Garcia, has he? That would be incredible, wouldn't it?
But I would be surprised. That would be surprised.
I would be shocked if he picked Sergio. That would be a real revelation.
You ruined it. You absolutely ruined it, guys.
Oh, come on. You can't post. Oh, I don't believe it. Oh, that's incredible.
I did. I wrote it down. It's written down here.
we'll pretend that we don't know yet. You can surprise
okay.
us in a few minutes. But for now, my top five, and my fifth on my list is Rory McIlroy. I just think that even though he's been out for a couple of months and he's come back from injury, there are question marks obviously about how his game's going to be, how he's physically going to be. But I don't think he'd be there if he wasn't in a position he felt he could actually contend and potentially win the championship. And for me, if that's the case, which I'm sure it is, you cannot completely discount his ability, his talent. For me, Rory, as much as Jordan Spieth is remarkable, I think if every player plays to their absolute best, I think Rory McIlroy is the most gifted player in the game at the moment, and has been for a number of years. And his record here, he came very close to winning here 5 years ago. He has great success in the PGA Championship. And if he gets up to a decent start on Thursday, I think Rory can work his way into the championship, and he'll be there or thereabouts come the weekend. He may not win the championship overall, but I think I would not be shocked if Rory won this week. I really wouldn't. And I think that would be an incredible story, and would put him back on the top of the headlines ahead of Jordan Spieth, who's kind of taken his mantle a little bit this year, despite the fact that Rory is still world number one. My number four pick is perhaps a somewhat outside player. And many outsiders have won the PGA Championship down the years. In fact, has the most first-time winners of any major, and also the most one-hit wonders, if you like. More players than any other major have actually won this only once. So guys like Rich Beaman, Sean McKeel, and Wai Yang obviously stand out in recent years as being examples of that. And I think one person here who could claim his first major is Brooks Koepka, who played solidly last week at Bridgestone, finishing a tie for sixth. He's played really solidly all year. He's making cuts all the time. He's just playing very well. He has a power game that I think will suit this golf course, particularly if it's playing as soft as is anticipated. because what we have to remember about Whistling Straits is it is not in any way, shape, or form a links course. The only characteristic it shares of a links course is the fact that it's next to the water. That's about it. The golf course may look like one, but it doesn't play like one. It's far too soft to be like that. However, I think Brooks Koepka is someone who will come here in good form, somewhat under the radar, a player who I think is waiting to burst onto the upper echelons of the game. He can follow in the footsteps of all the likes of Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and become one of the marquee young players from the US. And I think this could be a major for Brooks Koepka. He potentially wins and really puts himself out there as being one of the potential leading players going into the next 5-10 years. My number three player on the list is a story that I would love to see happen, and that is Jordan Spieth winning his third major of the year. No one has ever, in fact, gentlemen, won the three United States-based majors, the Masters, the US Open, and the PGA in the same year. So that would be something truly historic, I guess an American Grand Slam, if you like. And I think Jordan, someone who perhaps a little bit rusty last week at Bristol, improved at the weekend, shook off a little bit and got a good finish there. He will continue to shake that rust off and improve this week. And I think this golf course, he's shown he can compete in any golf course. He won at Augusta National. He won at Chambers Bay, which was a mad place. He almost won at the old course. He can play any golf course. He can adapt his game and his mentality to the conditions and the challenges the golf course presents. And that is perhaps the greatest attribute to have in major championships. And I think that will stand him very well. And I think he could certainly contend this weekend and potentially win a third major, which would be incredible at just the age of 22. My number two on the list is very similar to Carlos. I'm also going for Bubba Watson. I was a little bit unsure about this one, but I look at his record. He obviously finished second here 5 years ago, losing in the playoff to Martin Kaymer. He's been in decent form in recent weeks. However, what stands out for Bubba, though, is even though you may think his idiosyncratic game would perhaps suit a venue like Whistling Straits, his record in the majors, the Masters apart, is absolutely awful. He's missed the last two cuts at Chambers Bay and St Andrews, and he hasn't actually, apart from that second place 5 years ago here at Whistling Straits, he hasn't posted a single top 10 finish in a major apart from his two Masters victories. So if it's not Augusta, apparently Bubba can't play it. So if Bubba gets his head on straight and focuses and keeps himself professional and just turns up and plays to his best, his talent is so monumental that he should be a contender on a golf course like this. And if his head's on straight, I think he will be potentially in the mix coming the weekend. But my number one pick, and I'm going to follow in Carlos's footsteps once again and pick Jason Day, who I think is someone, much like people say, well, he deserves a major. He's knocked on the door so many times, surely it will open eventually. But of course, as we have seen down the years, that doesn't always happen. Didn't happen for Colin Montgomery. It hasn't happened to this point for Sergio Garcia, although Fred thinks otherwise, of course. But for Jason Day, he's come so close in so many majors now in the past 5 years. In fact, the first major he contended in was actually at Whistling Straits 5 years ago. And when he was a lesser-known player at that time, that's when he first emerged onto the big national and international scene. And he's obviously carried that into that form, into all the majors in the subsequent 5 years, contending in so many of them. A few second-place finishes, obviously missing out in the playoff at St Andrews by a single shot. And, of course, he inspired and everyone admired his ability at Chambers Bay when he overcame the vertical that he suffered there, and he still fought bravely on the final round. So Jason Day is someone who, he's built the foundation for a strong major record. It's now time for him to finally get that first win. And I do honestly believe that we will be celebrating, we'll be admiring Jason Day finally claiming that major trophy on Sunday. But there's so many guys who can win this event. The 97 of the world's top 100 players are there, and all these guys are capable of coming through and winning a major championship. They're all talented players, they're all great players, not much between them all in reality, but I certainly think that one of these five players, Day, Watson, McIlroy, Spieth or Koepka, will be the ones who triumph on Sunday. But if any of those guys are in contention on Sunday, it's going to be a fascinating weekend, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how it all plays out this week.
Okay, Fred, the rest of the show is yours. I know that you picked like 100 times, so it's all yours.
Well, I got a couple minutes, so I'm gonna hold off for just a second. I was looking at the pairings earlier today. You've got Jason Day is with Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler, so that ought to be a really interesting group. They're off in the morning on Thursday. You got Tiger Woods with Martin Kaymer and Keegan Bradley, so that's a fun group to watch. Then in the afternoon, you've got Luke Donald
Graham McDowell and Patrick Reed. After them, Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson, Brooks Koepka, who Kieran likes, who I have to agree, his name popped into my consciousness also. But the premier grouping is, of course, Zach Johnson, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy, who have together won the last five majors. Of course, Rory winning the last two last year, Jordan winning the first two this year, and then Zach winning at the Open Championship. And then trailing up here, you've got Duffner, Mickelson, and Padraig Harrington. So, the most interesting pairing of all, guys. I don't know if you saw this or not. Colin Montgomery is with John Daly. I'll bet Monty is just excited about that, isn't he? For Thursday and Friday, I would love to tag along with that group and see the dynamic on that. That's got to be pretty good. but anyhow, I looked also at the odds. Jordan Spieth is favored by the bettors at 7-1. Rory McIlroy is 12-1. Jason Day, who both of you like, 14-1. Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, both 16-1, as well as Justin Rose, and then Ricky comes in at 20-1. So those are the names that keep popping up, and I have to say I had those same names on my list. I really think the winner is going to come from this group. I have to agree with both of you. Jason Day has as good a chance of winning this thing as anybody. I had a chance to meet with the other day is actually his wife's uncle. And he spent quite a bit of time with Ellie. He spent quite a bit of time with Ellie and Jason, and he had some great insight into what Jason does. And also I got to talk with Luke Elvey quite a bit. He's very close to Jason, and about his plan and what he's doing with his team. He takes a real business approach to this. It's just not he just doesn't show up to play. They sit down, they figure everything out, and what they're going to work on. So I have him listed as number five. One notch up is neither one of you mentioned Justin Rose, and I think he's a real threat. He's playing really well. On these kind of golf courses, he's as good as anybody. You know, he's coming off the win at the Memorial. He played well at Bridgestone, so I think he could win as well as anybody. Dustin Johnson, you know, I would love to see him win just to erase the problems he had in 2010. I like my guy Ricky Fowler. You know, I'm always pulling for Ricky, so he's going to get that major. And Kieran, you mentioned some of the best years and majors of all time. Ricky's top five in all four majors last year was pretty good stuff. You know, Tiger won the three. You're right, the one was the Open Championship. So. And you can hear it first right here, fans, right here on the Back Nine Report. Kieran named it the Am Slam. If Jordan Spieth were to win, so we'll be seeing that, I'm sure, around social media. But Jordan Spieth, of course, is my number one pick, and just would love to see him get the three majors in a year and the American Slam. But my surprise, guys, my surprise, I looked at this guy's name earlier, and I said, you know, he's a good iron player, and this golf course demands really good iron play. So over 72 holes, the percentages say if the better iron player may pull this thing out. And so, Carlos, I'm really disappointed in you not picking your guy. I'm gonna pick him for you. Sergio, I am not worthy.
You know, if you ask me, he made a decent run there at San Andreas last month, and in theory, you know, Link style scores like the Slim Straits should sue him, but it's a surprise that, you know, he missed the cut in both 2004 and 2010, so I don't like the way that he had played there at Whistling Straits, and that's why I didn't pick him. So sorry, Sergio, you know, you're not with
me. And you didn't pick Hideki, and we were watching Hideki hit some balls on the range today a little bit on TV, and he was not happy with the way he was striking the ball on the range. But, you know, I mean, he's a guy that's been doing well in these big tournaments, so we'll see.
Yeah, the only reason why I didn't pick Tiger was because of the mosquitoes. He said that, you know, the course is playing well, but there's a lot of mosquitoes there. So now we know already what's going to be the excuse if he doesn't win. So that's why, you know, I didn't pick.
And I should add before we get away from this that I did not pick Rory. He's absent from my list. And I just feel like that time off, you know, walking those hills, it's a hilly place. I just can't imagine him being 100%. If he makes a cut, that'd be fantastic for me. And if he would happen to go on a win, more power to him. But I have a hard time believing that. And Bubba, I just don't think he's got the head for the place. I think he just got lucky in 2010. And, you know, none of us have been talking about anybody that's hardly over 30 years old. So is there anybody out there over 30 that can win this thing?
Colin Montgomery.
Oh, there you go. He's over 30.
Or John Daly. You know,
he's doomed. He's with Daly the first 2 days.
That's a problem.
Or Mark Brooks.
Who?
Mark Brooks, former champion, 1996. Oh. Mark Brooks actually has the most incredible record in the PGA Championship. He won the championship in 1996 at Valhalla, beating Kenny Perry in the playoff. And Mark Brooks hasn't made the cut in the PGA since 1999. But yet, he's still playing. So perhaps this will be his year.
I just wrote it down here. Mark Brooks. Okay.
You still got Lee Westwood looking for a first major. You got Patty in the field, a former PGA champion. You got Ernie Els is hanging around. So, you know, some of these older guys.
One last interesting little snippet about this championship is the fact that it will be the last major where the anchored putter is legal.
Yeah. That's true.
So Adam Scott, the pressure is on him to have a big week. Because
good
after
point.
This week, the way he's putting, I think he's done.
Good point.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, guys, we have a couple of minutes. So, Fred, go in with your final pass for today.
Just real quick, in another sign of the sluggish golf retail sales, Adidas, the parent to TaylorMade, Adams and Ashworth, is seeking options to spin off or sell the Ashworth and Adams brands in this declining retail golf market. Adidas, TaylorMade, bought Adams in 2012 for $70 million, not that long ago, and now they're looking to dump it. TaylorMade bought Ashworth in 2008. And although Adidas and TaylorMade beat profit projections and the company is profitable, Adams and Ashworth have performed below company expectations, thus the desire to find an exit strategy for those two businesses. A little thing came across my email today. And I know you guys would enjoy this. You can win a Myrtle Beach golf trip with Meredith Kirk, who was voted one of the most beautiful women in golf. So you guys can jump on your computers there and visit MyrtleBeachTrips.com and get signed up for that. And you can meet, go play golf with Meredith Cook. And Shackelford had a thing about the IOC and drug testing. I guess the numbers were a little higher for golfers than maybe some of the other sports, but that maybe was just a little bit tilted because of antihistamines and some of those other things. So that's all I have, Carlos.
Well, thanks to you, that website is going down right now. So, Kieran, 1 minute for you for your final thought for this week.
Well, I must quickly say that please forgive my ignorance, but I have absolutely no idea who Meredith Kirk is, but I would love to meet her, so hopefully we can get that arranged at some point. I'm sure she's wonderful. However,
there's a lovely picture of her on the website. You can go check it out.
I'll check it out now. Yeah. After we're done here, I'm going to check her out. Anyway, moving swiftly on from that bombshell. On the PGA Championship this week, for me, it is the fourth major in so many different ways, and you know, Fred's not quite excited about it as he would be the Masters or the Open Championship, and that's perfectly understandable. I agree with that as well. However, it's still something very special, and when we have 8 months until the next major, and when you get, you know, it is something separate from the run-of-the-mill every week tour events, and there's so many great storylines this week. Spieth, Rory, Dustin, Jason Day, you know, what's Tiger going to do? There's so much to see this week. A golf course that, you know, whether it be controversial, whether it be whether you like it or not, and there's people in both camps in that story, but you know, either way, it's an interesting and visually striking course, and this championship, you know, it may be the unsexy of the majors, the least sexy of the majors, but quite often it provides the most excitement. We saw it last year, we've seen it in the past as well. So I expect something very entertaining this weekend, and whoever wins the championship on Sunday will not only overcome a very uncooperative and difficult golf course, but they will also overcome a really, really strong field. So I'm looking forward to PGA this week, and I've certainly enjoyed talking about it with you guys tonight, and hopefully we'll have some more great storylines to talk about in the future, because golf's in a really good place at the moment. So many great young players, so many great players, internationally diverse, demographically diverse, and one of those guys is going to win this week, and that's going to be another great story to talk about going into next year, because 2016 is looking great already. 2015 was pretty good, but next year is going to be fantastic. So the PGA, last major of the year, that should cap off what's been a very special major season.
And for me, just to one quick note, sad note, LPGA founder and 11-time major winner Louise Socks has died. She was 91 years old and was regarded as a pioneer of the women's game, co-founding the LPGA with 12 other people in 1950. She won 61 titles, 11 majors, among them 15 amateur championships. She was also the first woman to win the Golf Grand Slam, and the LPGA Rookie of the Year Award is also named after her. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour and a half. Special thanks to Kieran Clark for being with us one more time. Great insight, great talk with you. Special thanks also to our VIGs, Luke Elby and Jason Mengel. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Also, through tuning in, download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader and Kieran Clark, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.